Welcome back to the Dungeon Master's Block, the place where we come to talk about the Dungeon Master, the most important person in the game. With every conversation, we hope to inspire as many as possible to keep on Dungeon Mastering.
And I'm one of your hosts, DM Neil, aka Jote Moniak. And today we are going to be flipping the script, and instead of our creation and inspiration episodes, we're going to have a destruction and inspiration episode instead. And I have none other than DM Jared returning once again to give some ideas on different ways to end your campaign instead of starting them. But if you're one of our patrons, then you would be able to listen to the latest episode of our AP series that's on there called Player Agency. We are still building out the world further and further before jumping all the way into play. And if you pay attention, next week there will be a PDF for a druidic grove that you can use in your game as a lair for one of your NPCs to be in. Is it the big bad? Is it an ally of your group and your group is defending this grove? A ton of different options that you could do there. Also, keep an eye out. We plan on compiling all of the previous PDFs into one and potentially start doing a living document rather than one at a time. Or maybe we'll do both, and that is the best catch-all to help everybody out. You can hit one download and everything will be there, or you can add them piece by piece. But that's enough me talking. Let's head to the meat.
I'm starving. We ain't had nothing but maggoty bread for 3 stinking days.
Why can't we have some meat?
The plate meat back on the menu, boys.
Today for the meat, we have a very special guest. I mean, I feel like guest is an understatement. The one, the only, DM Jared. We have shared rooms. We have shared some of the absolute most fun RPG tables because you provide me with concepts that I am all too ready to try, like none other than Jason Statham's Big Vacation. Jared, welcome back to the pod.
Hey, yeah, it's great to be here again. It's been. I feel like it's been a long time. It's been too long.
Way too long. Yeah.
I'm calling you out right here.
No, that's fine. I accept. So I feel like to make up for that, and I know I've talked about it, but how did you feel after playing Jason Statham's Big Vacation?
Oh, I mean, it's great. Well, a wonderful pouty Jason Statham to deal with. That was played wonderfully.
Thank you. Yes. Oh, and the cutscenes and all the rest of the cast of the Expendables being hidden amongst the goons. So it was like double disguise at one point where they stand up, the goons or the innocent bystanders take off their masks to be goons, only for those half to take off their masks to be the rest of the Expendables cast. Yeah.
The Expendables. Oh yeah, man. The perfect double dip reveal at the end of the hackneyed action, yes, thriller.
So yeah, dear listener, if you haven't experienced this wonderful, wonderful game, it is a one page rules style game. And I think if you don't have enough players show up, or if you just want to kind of do something off out of left field, Jason Statham's Big Vacation, it's for you. But what have you, speaking of, it's been so long, what have you been up to since last time you were here?
You know, I have gone significantly more off the deep end in working on campaign stuff to the point that it has maybe become an obsession. I don't even play as many video games as I used to because I just spend like so many days working on maps and spending way too much money on map making software and you know, that kind of stuff. But you know, day to day, just trying to make my players have experiences that no one else could really make for them.
That, ooh, we got deep. I like this. Wow. There's so much that we could do from that. We may have to have you back on to just talk about that one sentence, because I think that one sentence fully encapsulates the difference between a home game and a convention game in a way that I don't like most people probably won't understand until they're a dungeon master, because that's what it boils down to. I can do that for my home game. Right. And I can say that confidently. I can confidently do that for my home game. I can maybe do that at a convention game.
That I can't promise that because I don't know. There's too many unknowns for me. Whereas at the home game, I know these people. I know some of them since they were in diapers. So
the things I would do at my home game are things that I would never do at a convention table. In fact, I would never tell. The things that I might bring up today, I might preface with saying, this is a terrible idea. But, you know, sometimes, you know, when you know the people well enough, you know that they're in for that really, like, nonsense that would never work for anyone else.
Having met most of your players, can confirm that would be the case. Okay, so we're going to jump over to our surprise question. And I don't want to. Okay, I'm going to reframe my question because I feel like if I ask a "What is your favorite?" question, I think it'll lock you up. I think it'd be too hard unless maybe you have it. What do you think? Let's say someone had never played a Sonic video game in their entire life. What is the first Sonic game you would suggest for them to play?
Sonic Mania. Okay, Sonic Mania for sure.
I'm going to write it down. All right, kids, you ready?
I mean, it blends like the original like feel of Sonic, but it gives you Sonic in a way that everyone who played Sonic as a kid remembers Sonic being like.
This is a key thing about nostalgia that a lot of people miss is that it's not about what it was, it's about what it felt like. You can't. Because if you go watch certain things, they don't feel the same because you're not in that same space. So recreating things, that's the key. It has to feel like what you remember, not be what it was, which is very difficult.
Bringing someone back, having brought someone to Sonic Adventure 2, having never, you know, my personal favorite, with them having never played it, it gets real rough sometimes. Yeah. It gets real like, ooh. And that's coming from someone who had City Escape on their wedding playlist and the entire dance floor exploded when that song came on. Like, it's beloved, but you gotta, if someone's never played something before, you have to like try and find something that captures that experience.
If you didn't know, one of the two people on this recording can hear a track from a Sonic game and identify the level it came from, and it's not me.
Oh man, I forgot about that. I forgot about that savant level display I put on for exclusive. Like, I'm not an incredibly like massively like I'm no genius, but when it comes to meaningless. Absolutely meaningless, useless video game trivia.
You're right.
There's no one else. No, just ready. Geek Wars Live 3-time champion. Yes. I'm just saying.
Right there. So ready. Okay. But we're going to jump into the topic at hand. I forget how you and I settled on this idea. I can tell you some insider baseball as to why I would settle on this opposed to our normal episode of creation and inspiration. Eventually, I'm just kind of run out. I know Mitch and Chris have felt the same way. You do enough creation and inspiration episodes, you've created and inspired about all you can in that particular direction. So as you've heard from the intro and outro, probably not the outro because we're not there yet, but from the intro, this is going to be very different because it will be destruction and inspiration, where we'll go back and forth with campaign ending ideas rather than campaign beginning ideas. I think it's important to have these in your back pocket because it could be that you don't realize until like maybe just one session before, or even probably less so, but even in the moment that like this might be it, like this might be make sense as the last session of this campaign, and that can be okay. Like I mean ending a campaign is hard, but I think sometimes, just like, you know, just like popular media and my wife being very angry about finding out that Grey's Anatomy has been renewed for another season, despite supposedly wanting to end 4 seasons ago. Maybe sometimes it's best to hang up the dice.
Right. So like we've all been there. Anyone who's been playing D&D for any amount of time, everyone's been in a game where the game just didn't end, and I don't mean like you kept playing, I mean like everyone just petered out and everyone stopped playing, or, you know, the DM realized they kind of didn't have anywhere they were planning on going with it, or it might be one where it just went on too long. And, you know, it's great to have like those experiences with those same characters, but eventually, like you said, with like Grey's Anatomy, but with so many shows, we've all seen those shows that go on for, you know, they've been going on for 5 seasons too long, and the characters just have to like become different characters. Like, they just have to change their characterization to make plot lines make sense. And they have to just start introducing more and more contrived stuff, or just repeat things they've done before. And it gets to the point, it's like, if you ended this, if you gave me less content, you would be a 10 out of 10 show. And it's the same thing with games. There's times where, you know, you need to know what you're doing with it. You need to know where you need to find where the appropriate ending is. And, you know, that's the greatest thing a DM can do. Well, the greatest thing they can do is to get a group of people to arrive at the same time once a week and play a game. But the second greatest thing they can do, in my opinion, is to deliver a satisfying ending. And I just find that so lacking, seemingly, a lot of times.
Okay, that means we got 10 in front of us. You know what? I'll let you kick it off. What is your... They don't have to be ordered. It's such a weird thing because we're going to number them and we're going to order them. They do not need to be in a specific order. You can put them in an order if you want. Inevitably, once we start talking about them, my order was wrong, no matter what. Guaranteed. 100 out of 100 times, it was not the right order. But what is your number 5?
So, for me, and they're not ordered, this is just the first one that's at the forefront of my mind, because it's been at the forefront of my mind, is the honest-to-God end of the world. Right. This is a scenario in which the players, maybe the players failed, but maybe the players, they didn't fail, but stuff's happening no matter what. So this is actually the current issue in my current campaign, in which this campaign may end one of two ways, either the end of the world or not the end of the world. And that happens a lot, right? Everyone's campaign seems to be an end of the world thing, but this one's a little more real in that ostensibly, it is that there's a new world that is trying to be made, and this world is like stopping that world from existing. And this world has been, over the course of the last couple campaigns, has been falling apart and crumbling and going piece by piece. And going into the thing I mentioned earlier about ideas that you should never ever do, my players have actually been de-leveling over the course of this campaign.
Oh, that's right.
So as the world ends and falls apart and everything crumbles into nothingness, everything is becoming weaker and less magical. And that is directly reflected in the players regressing in levels. Some of them are literal gods who had like crashed down to the material plane and are having to deal with this. And like I said, the world is ending. Because that's just where I felt was appropriate. I felt like I've told almost all the stories that I can tell in this world, and that I have used it fully as much as I can as a creative. And I'm like, so the only sensible thing is to move on to another world. But I don't want to just leave a place and all these what ifs behind. I want it to end satisfying and narratively and just close it up. So these players are actually, either they are going to fail, if they succeed, they might be the ones who their players, their characters create the new world.
Okay.
And they become like the architects of the new world. Or if they truly, truly hold on to that world strong enough, and they as players and characters are both so insistent on keeping it around, they might be able to stop it. But my plan is, you know, they always say in art, delete your art, like don't hold on to your darlings. And despite the giant, extremely nice print of my world map I have behind me, I'm willing to throw it all away if it's the right artistic decision, it's the right story decision, and it's the right thing for the characters and players.
I love it. Well, and you also have those memories you have that you have literal physical items that would let you always reflect back on that world. And it's nothing to say that other stories can't be told at different times in the world leading up to that. But like, this is it. This is the end. I love it. Blow it up. Let's do it. Sometimes I know myself. Sometimes I need a weird name for it, or like my brain won't like want to work on it.
You got to have that tagline.
So I have entitled this the epic log. So rather than an epilogue, you do an epic log where you realize that this, and I say this having done this before, where you realize that the campaign and or the world itself, it's done, but things aren't really done in the sense that like I was going through like a mega dungeon and I could just kind of tell that had run its course as a place that they wanted to continue doing adventure in. But it was a very linear in the sense that like you could tell like there were more levels and there's something at the bottom of this. But rather than like force them to go through these additional levels, we all agreed that we were going to move to a new campaign. So I said, okay, cool. So next session, we're just going to talk through everything that would have still happened, have that dialogue, and then talk about your characters after. So I like walked and talked them through like the rest of the dungeon and what their characters would have done and what their characters would have become, which is interesting. It was an interesting experience to go through the idea of like, this is the thing you're actively doing and now you're just not doing it. But we're going to talk about what it would have been like to go through that experience. And they all really enjoyed it. And then, yeah, we started a brand new campaign and had a ton of fun in the new campaign. Like I said, just that model of Mega Dungeon just stopped working because, again, it's pretty repetitive. And there's so much invested in that story idea that it wouldn't make sense for them to go somewhere else with those characters. Like, that's what these characters are doing. That's what they would have done. Like, there's nothing other than finishing this dungeon that those characters would have found fulfilling. But again, I think it was like another four levels and all the hardest levels because now they're at the bottom. I was like, this just isn't, let's not. And so, yeah, just epic log.
That really is like the best of both worlds, right? Because I mean, obviously for all the pretentious art stuff I talk, the primary goal is to give the players a cool and enjoyable experience. And like, if that's not happening anymore, right, you need to make a change. And I mean, yeah, that's obviously it's like in the perfect world, you'd have the next four levels be, you know, they want to do it and they're going to be so excited to conquer that dungeon in real time gameplay. But, you know, sometimes there's specific things and sometimes life gets in the way where some players won't be able to participate in the same way, too, where that something like that can come in handy. Because it's like, oh, well, your character was like intrinsic to this whole thing. Like, yeah. We're going in the dungeon because of you. So, like, what does that mean? So, yeah, I mean, it's really smart to really just give the players the opportunity to just truncate the whole experience, right? It's all collaborative storytelling. So just move the rule book out of the way and close it up in a way that satisfies everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you had so many unanswered, like open ended questions from like, what is this? What's going on here from like the first level you enter the dungeon? So like a year or two of this campaign, that question remains unanswered because like that was the whole question of like, why does this exist? And that is answered at the end. So it would just be weird. Like I want them to know the answer because like I don't want to be the only one that knows. Like there's the whole point of you guys doing this. So here's the answer. So that was my number five, but that means, what is your number four?
So the next one I thought of is, of course, the noble sacrifice, right? We've all had the situation where one player has to die to make something happen, but there could be a situation where, especially if you feel like the player characters have like kind of run their course with these characters, where you can kind of tell, right, when if you're really paying attention to your players, you'll feel like they might have hit all their narrative beats for their story, right? You might have explored everyone's backstory to a point that they're satisfied with and they don't have anything kind of left to do. But you don't necessarily have to only do this when you're done with the characters. If your players are interested in the real tragedy that can happen, you know, characters with unrealized dreams and aspirations, obviously dying because is sort of the bread and butter of emotional roleplay. But that being said, the party having to sacrifice themselves to accomplish some sort of goal. They have to go on some kind of suicide mission or some kind of, you know, to a place that they can never return from to stop the big, bad, evil guy or to stop, you know, stop some terrible thing happening. And the players going into this knowing like, hey, this is it for these characters. And I mean, you can have a combination, right? Some people who are like, man, I really wish that this person, you know, this person never got to say what they wanted to say to this other person, or they never got to find the thing that they wanted, or I never got to get revenge for my family, or, you know, or characters that are all like, you know, I've done what I felt like I had to do. There's different levels to that. And obviously, right, you need to know your players. I mean, everything goes with that preface, but of what they're comfortable with as far as you kind of, I guess, forcing player death on them. But it's, like I said, knowing your players, maybe if they would not be okay with that, then maybe only really move towards that end if they are comfortable with it and they've finished with those characters. But on the same vein, you know, some people, you know, they might have the opportunity to not have to all sacrifice themselves depending on how the game has went. And if they found the four crystals at the far ends of the land or whatever, you know, but if they, you know, there's the way that I did it personally is, you know, they had the opportunity to not do it. And it would have made the next campaign much, much harder for their player characters, because they would have failed to have stopped the thing. So it's really the players making that same choice with their characters. Like, is this worth this person's life to do this thing? And for the extra emotional gut punch, I actually made them to signify the willingness of sacrifice. They all had to rip up their character sheets at the table.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's an idea I shamelessly stole from someone else, but he, I'm sure, shamelessly stole that from someone else too in the past.
Oh yeah.
Right. What they don't know is that I kept all the shredded paper out of the trash, and then another day they weren't there, I retaped all of it, and those characters are going to secretly come back in the future. But, you know, they don't know that part.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it happens, and it works really well, and there's so many different avenues that you can go from that. And I think some of mine will, like, take that same thing. So some of these will cross. Let's start, because we also did not talk about our ideas together.
Would it might have been a good idea to do that, but you know.
Nope. No, I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
It's not organic.
I want the raw emotions. Yeah, I love it because I did that with a character. You'll hear more later. But like, it could be an individual character. It could be everyone together. It could be, yeah, it's, I wouldn't even say that one's really tropey. I mean, like, that one has to fit. It can feel trope. It can feel like it is a trope if they just do it and there's not enough behind it. But I think with the right idea or feeling behind it, I think it lands really well each time you do it. So there's a game that I did not realize. If you are not on the internet or the App Store before December 10th, 2018, you would not have been able to. That's my
birthday. Weird.
That's super. I totally didn't think, because I was so sad. I was like, wait, you're right. Okay, cool. Well, so on your birthday, several years ago, a game and its two sequels were removed from the App Store because they couldn't update them anymore. And those games were Infinity Blade 1-3. Did you ever play these?
I did.
So they just disappeared. So like, if you weren't playing App Store games within this, because it was Apple only, in this specific set of time, like, you just, Infinity Blade came and went and you just didn't experience it directly. So the game basically is, you're a character, you have a sword, you can upgrade that sword, you can upgrade several things, and you get to the boss and you die inevitably because the boss is much stronger than you are, because the main mechanic here is that you wake up and you are led to believe that it is, you, like, you are arriving somewhere between, like, I think it's like 16 to 20 years later as, like, the son of the character you were just playing. Rinse, repeat, level up, go on, so on and so forth. Only to find out later that there's a lot of really high-end technology involved. You're actually just a clone in a vat that pops out shortly after you die, and it just keeps doing this cycle over and over and over again. I don't know that you need to full Infinity Blade it, but I really like the idea of you die and you wake up right after as a way to, like, end a campaign. So, like, your characters all TPK wipe and then wake up as new characters, only to find out that they're not, that they are actually rinse repeat characters of their past.
That's so, yeah, that's, I mean, right, the use, you basically immediately establish a hook, right? Even if they don't know what they're doing, you've done the thing where the season finale ends with a cliffhanger, and you just have to watch the next season now. So, I mean, yeah, that's definitely, it's so, I wonder how you would do it with, like, people making new characters, or do they just, like, are they the same people with different classes, or, like, what does that mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, especially if they don't know that they're the same characters.
Yeah.
So, like, what does that mean? Are they, like, were they cloned and then raised in different environments to try and, like, create the perfect adventurer or soldier or whatever, you know, a bunch of clones of the same person that they tried different nurture options with.
Yeah. And then you could have it where they're just meeting up, and it could even be that, ooh, or you could just even have class restrictions on, like, when you set up the first part of the first game. And so then your players are all kind of picking the same class. I mean, you could restrict a lot of the options to keep them inside of a certain kind of track for their character creation, only to figure out later the reason is because that's the set of material they're working with.
Right, right. I mean, and you could even be like, hey, you're going to play, you know, characters from a multi-generational thing. So, like, plan to play the same family of characters over generations. Yep. You know, start with that, and then they're already in the mindset of, like, oh, well, my dad was a ranger, so I will probably be a ranger. And, oh,
yeah. Well, yeah, and you can adapt, and with the Infinity Blade, like, you could change a surprising amount when, like, after each reset, and, like, just take a different approach and learn different things. But that would also be interesting to have them, because part of this is also having you come back, but you're at that same level. And so, like, that could be an interesting thing, too. Like, let's say they're level 5 and they get wiped, because, like, you know you're going to wipe them, but then, like, they make new level 5 characters and start again. Yeah, Infinity Blade. I kind of forgot it. It, like, flew off, what, at that point, like, over 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Almost 5.5 years ago. It just hasn't been on the App Store and just isn't a thing a person can play easily.
Pulled a Flappy Bird.
Yeah, they're like, we can't do it. I'm not trying to update this. Okay, 3.
Okay. The next one that I had thought of is the times where maybe the end of the campaign happens to you, more or less, where the dice fell the wrong way for your players, and there's just no world that you could say that it's not a TPK. Mm. Like, there's no scenario you can come, like, even if you want to keep them around, there's just no scenario you can come up with that makes any sense or keeps any stakes in the world. Right. Because that's also important. Right. The players need to feel like death is a possibility in a lot of games, not every game, but a lot of the kind of games that we play and make. And that has to be a real threat. And sometimes you got to follow through on that threat when you roll that public, you know, nat 20 and crit the healer when they really need him to be alive.
Yep.
And there, so a lot of people say, you know, in certain situations, it might make sense for making just the players make a new party, and you have to find a way to include them in the story. But sometimes that doesn't really make sense either. And a TPK just means, like, hey, the story of these people is over. You know, the thing they were trying to do, it's not going to happen, or at least won't happen anywhere close to the way that we had initially. And that's the end of this campaign. We need to come up with a new one. And there's, you know, there's layers to that where obviously you want the story to make sense, and you want the characters to feel like, you know, the world is a consistent world that makes sense and their actions have consequences. So maybe you need to figure out, like, you know, the thing that they were trying to do, what happens if that thing isn't done? The thing that they were trying to stop, what happens if that happens? And, you know, maybe that means the next set of players are playing in a significantly different world than the previous, or the next set of characters playing in a very different world than the previous set of characters. And you just have to make the world a whole lot worse and hostile, or maybe even better if the big bad evil guy was trying to, like, instill their perfect utopia according to their things. You know, maybe they're living under an evil tyrannical ruler now. So there's, obviously it depends on the campaign, but, you know, the reason that my campaign world is ending is because my players they failed. Like, they failed at a campaign really hard in a really big way. And that means that, like, the stakes were never higher. And I was just like, I had to take a couple months off. I ran completely other things because I'm like, I need to figure it out what this means for them, for the world, for everything, that the world, that they failed to stop the thing that is trying to end the world.
Okay. I feel like some of these are not going to be, like, you prefaced well enough, though. Some of these are not going to fly at every table. This is one of them. Having a standing moral quandary, like, as the way that things end. Like, we talked about the heroic sacrifice. There's also the non-heroic sacrifice version as well. You know, a lot of concepts that could be, and these could be good catalysts for either a second campaign with these characters. It could be a catalyst for a campaign of other characters who no longer think that these characters are heroes because of their choices. But you think about, like, oh, well, the ends justify the means kind of ending to your campaign, where it's like, well, we blew up this planet because we know the bad guy was on the planet. So we solved it. But did we solve it? I mean, did we not create a new myriad set of problems? But yeah, the idea that either knowing or unknowing, that I would say knowing, at least for one player, like this moral quandary of, we did something, is it that we used a power that we shouldn't have to stop this bigger bad? Or, like, you, and the other thing is, I think it's important that, like, they undeniably won. It is not questioned that, like, the big bad is not coming back. The, you know, the apocalypse has been averted. Like, I think that that's what works with this ending, is that it's ended. It's without a doubt, you succeeded, but the price you paid was too high.
Well, yeah. And then, like, whatever way that player destroyed an entire planet, like, do they still have access to something like that? Is that something, like, is that, how unprecedented is this? Is this player character now the new big bad for the next campaign because they are willing to commit massive, like, terrible war crimes to get to do what they think is right? I mean, that's the definition of most villains, are people that are willing to do terrible things because of what they believe in.
They think, yeah, they're the hero of their story for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, it sets up a lot of different directions that you could go, that later, you know, you could jump ahead a hundred years to find your new characters are basically going up against some, if not all, of your old characters because they became the villains by their choice. So that's, yeah, the moral quandary. Super fun. All your players will love it. Definitely try it out. Yeah.
Guaranteed. Put players in where the situation is to let someone do terrible things or to do a big war crime.
Yep. It'll be fine. What is your number two?
So this one's a little more milquetoast, but it does work most of the time, in that you know, they beat the big bad and they're trying to, you know, everyone always wants to talk about what's happening for their characters next. And, you know, most of the time when we end a campaign, the world is still around, thankfully. And that means those characters are still around. And it's one of those quandaries that we always have, where it's the Marvel problem, where when a big bad thing is happening, where are these other, like, super powerful people? So, you know, you might maybe preload your players with the fact that, you know, when they know the ending is coming, you load them up with, like, hey, start thinking about what your character might be doing, like, way down the line. And you create, and then, you know, after the end, you have them, you know, you and them will narrate together, you know, what does your character do next week after this is done? What do they do in a few months? What do they do in 10 years? You know, and have an idea with where those characters' lives are going. And then that might, and you might even get an idea of that, ask about that before the final session, and maybe find ways to incorporate that into the final session. Some of those hooks and everything that they talk about for the future of their character can be brought in that way. And one of my favorite moves is, down the line, when you have some players who you don't have everyone make it, you might only have, like, one or two people make it, and we can go like, hey, what are these guys doing?
Yeah.
You know, there's a problem on the eastern edge of the continent, and these two characters have been in contact. I think they're going to deal with that. And you can run like maybe a little one shot with these old characters, and it might be like a year since the last time they played with them, and you can bring them back in and have them get a little like a little taste of what that was again, and kind of explain what these people that are ostensibly very important and probably pretty powerful, what they're actually doing now that the main problem they were dealing with is over.
A good example of that is if you're listening to Venture Maidens that Celeste does, she'll have kind of special one-offs because not all of season one cast is part of season two. So when they can get the whole cast of season one back together, they pick up from the end of the season one campaign and kind of touch back into those characters and then kind of kick them into a short one shot. Cause they're, like you said, they're all doing their own epilogues type things, but you know, something happened and they all know about it, or one of them has a problem and they know who to call. So then they all get back together for, one more hurrah. So yeah, it's very interesting. A lot of fun for sure. Okay. For my number two, we are, instead of talking Infinity Blade, we're going to be talking Infinity Stone. Where you have the ability, and I would say definitely do this as a one-way street. If you're ending a campaign with this, a one-way street where you can choose to go back in time and then basically have another shot at things. And so the way I did it, or the way I was a part of it, was not only did we go back and reset things, we epilogued 1,000 years before. So like we went back in time, basically starting a new timeline and epilogued from there, which at the time was also partial heroic sacrifice because I had given up I was playing a paladin warlock combo. They called it a Sadadin because it was a single attribute dependent character. So it was all charisma. So it's a Sadadin,
but it's also you don't kind play of like, all of your characters all charisma. That's how I play games.
And then Paladin Warlock, I was like sad. Ah, it all works. But I just had given up my Paladin powers to do one thing right before, and then we were given the option to go back in time to reset things. At which point, I also then lost access to my patron because they no longer existed.
Yeah.
So I basically became like an Eldritch Knight because like the theory was, okay, so this is an interesting warlock question for anybody to decide. Do I still get access to the powers I had? I just can't get more power because I don't have someone to give that to me, or would I lose all my warlock powers? We decided like I would still retain the levels of warlock I had and those powers because I was given those, but I have, unless I got a new patron, I would not obtain more. So I just basically became kind of an Eldritch Knight because I no longer had Paladin powers either.
Yeah, yeah. Weird. Yeah, I guess that depends on how the DM decides that works, you know?
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that anything that works one way for a warlock has to work the same for a cleric because they're just the same people with different branding.
True. Patrons, deities.
What's the difference?
Yeah, because a deity could easily be a patron, and a patron could be a deity. It's a lot. It's real close. So yeah, that was an interesting one. So then it was basically talking through like rebuilding the world in the image that we hoped would work better.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So it's a really interesting way to just like hard reset, potentially your entire world is just to shoot the players who typically, this works best at like a high level campaign. Shoot them back, and now they are truly like legendary characters because they help shape the world.
Right? Yeah. Once they're powerful enough to be able to really do that in the past without, and to live long enough to see massive change get affected.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it works really well to have that be a one-way street for them to like basically create a new timeline within your world, because maybe that's it. Like maybe you love the world. But like you said, all the stories have been told. So not only jumping back in time, those stories have been untold. So you can tell new ones. But now that you've done that with the knowledge at hand, like you can completely reshape the entire world based on that knowledge of things that may come to pass. Okay, then we're down to it. What is your final idea? Don't call it number one. What is your final idea for destruction and inspiration?
I have a joke answer first. The best way to end a campaign is to give the players a deck of many things.
Always. Always.
Now, I'm going to give a specific scenario that I think encompasses a couple of my ideas, because this is how I ended another campaign. My players had to fight over... This is the most anime-pilled thing in the world. They had to fight over who became a god.
Yes!
So there's two things there, right? There's a campaign that ends with your players having to kill each other. And that's one of those things, right? You need to know they're okay with that. But especially if they know from the start, the way I did it is each player thought that they were going to betray the party and that the rest of the party had aligned goals. But they all had, like, different goals from each other.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they all thought they were the one. So they were all expecting to, at the end, be in conflict with the rest of the party. So they already went in with that buy-in that that's what's going to happen. So you have a campaign that ends in everyone having to fight. And the simple fact of, like, someone getting to become a god at the end. And, you know, one of the players, you know, they succeeded. They won the fight. They didn't even kill everyone. They just had to really, they had to meet certain criteria in this god temple place, but they were all trying to stop each other from meeting that same criteria. They all like different things they needed to do, and whichever one did it became a god. And then you have to, you know, reconcile, what does that mean? What does that mean for a pantheon that's being disrupted with a player become with someone becoming a literal god and joining those ranks? And what kind of power do they have and what change do they affect? And this is the kind of thing that you could talk to that player about earlier on and kind of start working on, you know, where that's going to go down the line when someone, you know, someone or even multiple people ascend to godhood. And, you know, it does mean that kind of down the line, you're going to need to either really know that that character or those characters very well, or probably ask that player a lot of things. What is this god doing? What are their plans? You know, how do they react to the state of the world? So it does create a little more work for you down the line, but depending on the rules for how you're gods can interact with the world, it can be more or less disruptive. I mean, you're the one who decides how that works, right? So, you know, make it work for you, obviously. But that was my favorite way I ended a campaign.
So it's been brought up before by me. In 2012, the Avengers versus X-Men storyline was happening, and one of the big things that happened in it is basically they're deciding what should they do with Hope Summers. And it's like, yeah, this, that. They all fight. It's awesome. But what also happens is the Phoenix Force shows up and Iron Man is like, I got this. And what all he manages to do is split it into five parts, creating the Phoenix Five, which is Scott Summers, Emma Frost. So Cyclops, White Queen, Colossus, Magic, and Namor all share a fifth of the Phoenix power until, of course, they all start beating each other up, no longer sharing the Phoenix power, inevitably making Cyclops one of the most interesting villains for the Marvel Universe in a really, really long time through that storyline. But that's the way to go. Like, you done did it, but like now you have too much and only one of you can win. And you just have them hash it out. And it could even be more of that epilogue style and some roles are involved, or like, you know, it's more of you're moving chess pieces rather than doing the minutia of it. But yeah, figuring out who becomes the Phoenix, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. My number one, and this is one I moved to later, and also I really enjoy the name. So NPC you later. Is the name of this one.
Man, if I knew I had to come up with catchy names.
Well, I can't help myself.
You didn't warn me.
So for this one, basically, party wipe, and you go back through and you ask your players, which of the NPCs that we've met along the way do you think you would want to play and be inspired enough to come, like, take up your mantle? So, like, they know, like, you know, like, the world's going to know that you failed. They're going to find out one way or another. But, like, you have this previous group of individuals you've met along the way who, you know, your players interacted with them, touched their lives, maybe motivated and inspired them to say, hey, if they couldn't do it, maybe I'll pick up the mantle. And it could be that they help bring some of the players back, or they just finish the job. But the idea of NPC you later, where you're playing some of the NPCs throughout the campaign as the new group.
That is really neat. There's so many times that the players get really attached to specific NPCs and like just think that these people, usually it's the ones that you don't plan on being important at all. Always. You know, that you probably didn't even have a name for when they first met him.
Mugmerch, the goblin. Yep.
Yeah, right. Like my players know that if someone's named Jeff, that this guy was not planned on being there. Like They just know that, oh, this is not critical path, but it's going to be really fun to figure out what this guy's deal is.
Yep. We're just drill all the way into it. Yeah.
There's so many people that they get really attached to that I feel like could be really cool that they, especially to also the interesting experience and challenge of stepping into a character that is already realized in some ways, and how you embody that, and how they might be different after the experiences they had once you start playing as them. That's really cool.
And you could certainly add, like, if there weren't ones that really stood out, you could even have different touch points of, that's interesting, where maybe an NPC wouldn't be the one to go, but would they know someone? Was it, you've interacted with the king, let's say, and the king, he's he's a lethal weapon. He's too old for this. But what if his son is not? Or his brother? Or, or any version of that, an NPC that now will come along. The other is monstrous, or potentially more monstrous NPCs, or... I think there's just a lot to play with that would be really interesting.
Even if one player's like, oh man, I was really planning on playing a cleric next. And you're like, and they're like, but I think the farmhand that we saved, that we kept coming back to, was, always really nice and cool to us. It's like, well, good thing that this deity has now chosen them to step up and fill this role, and now they're a cleric.
Oh, that's it. You made it better. Well done. What if that's what happens, is that as they all pass away, that literal call to adventure strikes at that moment for those NPCs that they choose? Like it is, in the cleric scenario, a deity, if a patron, if a sorcerer, their bloodline sparks for the first time. If it's even just a fighter, like that deep in their heart and soul, that call to adventure has happened after hearing the news.
But their mentor that trained them gets killed to create the idealized tragic backstory as a reason to adventure.
Yeah. So I think that would be, I think really finding what is that like lightning bolt kind of moment for each of those NPCs to start them on that adventure is that'd be so much fun. The cook's just like, not today, puts the like pot on his head and just runs out.
That's the food mage origin story.
Yeah, cleaver in hand, pot on head, ready to go. Well, there it is. Destruction and inspiration, because like I said, creation and inspiration gets really difficult once you get far enough down that road. If you enjoyed this, let us know. Find us on social media. Find us in the emails, all of those things. But more than that, Jared, thanks for coming on. And where can people go to see what you might be doing, if that's something you want to tell them about?
Yeah, I'm still on that terrible place. The artist formerly known as X, formerly known as Twitter, at DMJERAD. I'm on the Dungeon Master Block Discord, DM Banter at DM Jared. Also, I'm around anywhere. I'm under that name basically anywhere that you can find someone on any kind of social media. So
perfect. We'll have some links in the show note, and definitely jump in the Discord, bit.ly/DM Banter. It's a fun place. Sometimes it's super active, sometimes it's not. That's the nature of Discord. But yes, I will say resolutely right now, it will not be as long as it was until you are back on the pod.
All right.
As always, I just want to thank Jared for coming on, spending some time thinking up with these ideas, which I know is a very difficult thing. It always feels easy until you try and get that last one and you just hit that, as you can well imagine, Dungeon Master's block. But if you want to tell us about ways that you've ended your campaign or ways that you've thought of but haven't tried just yet, you can always email us at dungeonmastersblock@gmail.com.
And of course, if you want to find us on social media, just toss Dungeon Masters Block in the search and you will no doubt find us. But as always, the Dungeon Masters Block is a proud member of the Block Party Podcast Network, where you can check out other shows like Detentions and Dragons, Dungeons and Dragons and Daughters, and more. And of course, thank you for listening to the Dungeon Masters Block, the place where we come to talk about the Dungeon Master, the most important person in the game, the only person capable of playing God, killing characters, and lowering the egos of everyone else at the table. I'm DM Neil. Good night, good luck, and keep on Dungeon Mastering.
Goodbye.